Hey guys, my guests tonight, Marianne Robb and Dave Rich, are going to be talking about law enforcement and UFOs. We'll be right back. Grab your popcorn and snacks. Find a comfy spot, take a seat or lie down, and let me transport you to a place of fantasy, ghost stories, ancient legends, odd creatures, alien encounters, and other magical topics. You may even decide to join the conversation. From faraway lands to your own backyard, with a small dash of pixie dust, turn out the lights and open your minds. The journey is about to begin. Happy Friday, everybody. How's everybody doing? I think you said great. I'm going to look forward to this weekend. It's going to start heating up again. It'll be hot through next Saturday, and then the cool down finally starts, the final cool down. But in the meantime, we're going to hit around 90, I think like 96 or 98 this week. So compared to Arizona, it's like spring. Anyway, welcome to the show. My name is Charlotte. I'm going to be your host for the next hour. I'm also the owner of the California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team based out of Sacramento. We're 45 strong up and down the state. Which means if you think you have a paranormal issue going on, we can get to you. It might take us a while, but we can get to you. And by a while, I mean 1 or 2 days. And in the case that it does take us 1 or 2 days, we do have mediums on staff who can phone you and speak with you about what may or may not be going on. And in most cases, they can settle that energy down until we can get out there. But we will get out there within 1 or 2 days, okay? That being said, you can find us all over social media. Just Google California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team and we'll pop right on up. If you're watching from Facebook tonight, and a lot of you are, please feel free to hit that follow button. If you're watching from YouTube, if you haven't done so already, please subscribe. I've got 1,000 videos sitting over at YouTube and they're all different topics because I'm a journalist and I don't like to cover constant paranormal stuff, so I kind of change it up, right? So check it out. There's a lot of videos over at YouTube. Same goes for Twitch. All right. And Rumble. If you guys are on Rumble, be sure to subscribe. Subscribe. Anyhow, welcome. And, oh, yes, one other thing. If you like what you see tonight, show me some love. Give me some thumbs up here. Give my guests some thumbs up or happy faces or whatever's out there. Got to show me some love. Anyway, this topic that I have tonight, I've told you guys before, you know, the way I feel is that I've been doing paranormal investigating for 25 years. And I have seen, you know, I've worked a lot of night shifts. In my lifetime, and I have seen weird things in the sky while driving home, okay? Because I used to, you know, any job I had was like 20 to 50 miles away, so I was driving home, you know, late at night sometimes. I was always on the night shift. So I have seen my fair share of weird stuff in the sky. This interests me because I am a journalist. I'm a freelance journalist. And, you know, you see a lot of cases come across, UFOs. You see a lot of cases, ghost cases and stuff come across. But to me, there's no better witness than a law enforcement officer or a law enforcement officer who has stories about UFO sightings they've investigated. Because they're, you know, they're trained observers. That's what they do. It's just like being a journalist. You're somewhat of a trained observer as a journalist, too, because you're watching everything around you. So I have a lot of respect for law enforcement, you know, and the paranormal. So I'm really excited to talk to these two, Marianne Robb and Dave Rich. I'm really excited to speak with them tonight about this, and let's bring them in, and they can tell you a little bit about themselves, and we'll get rolling with this. Here we go.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Oh, we're wonderful.
Tell me about you guys and how you got into all this, and we'll go from there.
Well, we are, of course, two retired police officers. I was 34 years on the job here in Arizona. Dave was 25 years. How we started all of this was kind of an interesting. We went to a MUFON meeting here in the Phoenix area. And after the meeting, Dave and I were kind of talking about, you know, you've got the government talking about the disclosure with the military, with pilots, and, you know, that's great, fine and dandy, but nobody's talking law enforcement. Nobody's talking first responders. And we're sitting here going, wait a minute. There are over 800,000 law enforcement officers in the United States. They work, you know, 24/7, 365. Why aren't they talking? And we thought, that's absolutely perfect. Why aren't they talking? Well, we've got a case in point right here, and I'll tell you that in just a second, and then we're going to turn it over to him. But
sure.
You know, we thought, as a law enforcement officer, if I saw something, do you think I'm really going to talk to just some stranger? No. The stigma, my credibility, losing my career over a light in the sky or maybe a Bigfoot or something. And so we says, there are officers out there that have seen things. We know that, but they're not talking.
Right.
So that's why we started UAPPD, Unidentified Anomalous Phenomenon PD, because not only does people see things in the sky, they see things on land, which is that's where the paranormal cryptids come in. And we actually have a case of seeing something in the water. So again, that's why we started. And then I was talking to Dave, and Dave goes, oh my gosh, yeah, there's a reason why we do need to start this. And he actually has a story, and it's the case in point of why we started UAPPD.
Okay, cool. Very cool.
Yeah, I don't know if you want the whole story, kind of segue into it a little bit. One of the things like Marianne touched on real quick is transparency, disclosure. Everybody's talking about it in the UFO community, and it even transcends into the paranormal community as well. But people have to remember there's a price for transparency. There's a price for disclosure. And it's understanding what that price is and understanding what the cost is that a lot of people don't really realize. Like when we were first forming the idea, the concept of UAPPD, that was one of the things that came up. We have a really good friend, Alejandro Rojas, who's involved in UFO investigations, things like that. And we got to talking. And one of the things that I remember during our conversation is like the misconception that a lot of people had where like law enforcement isn't talking about stuff that they see because it's part of some grand conspiracy that they're trying to help the government cover up what the truth is and cover up the reality. And I looked at them and I was like, no, that's like not even close to what it is. And it's much more down to earth. It's much more like closer to home when it comes to the individual officer. And that's where we kind of launched into this because we created UAPPD to help officers who have not just officers, but also like first responders, firefighters, EMTs, anybody who's experienced something that they can't explain, whether it's on the job or in their off duty time, for the exact reason, Charlotte, that you said. These individuals are trained observers. They've seen things. Most of the, like all of the time, when we talk to an officer, a firefighter, a first responder, we already know that whatever it was, if it was like a crop duster or if it was like a trick of light or car driving by or something like that, they're never going to tell us because they already like worked through that and was like, no, this isn't some mundane answer. Right. But the true, to get to the story, because I think that's probably what you guys want to really hear. The real reason that we started it was because I was an SRO working at a high school here in Arizona. The school that I was working at got a 911 call from the front desk of the school. And normally this does not really surprise anyone. However, it was a Saturday and it was at 11:54 in the morning. 911 calls. Dispatcher answers the phone, 911, what's your emergency? There's a voice that sounds like a younger female voice, like maybe in her teens, maybe in like early 20s. Sounds like it says, I'm scared. Dispatcher says, you're scared, or what was that? And it says it again, I'm scared. Dispatcher then responds with, you're scared? And then it says, no, and then drops, you hear the sound of the receiver dropping onto the counter. Obviously, because it's a 911 call, comes into the center. There's a voice on the other end of the line. It's now an open line. For the next 14 minutes, the dispatcher is trying to get somebody to pick up, saying, hello, are you there? Please pick up the phone. Hello. Meanwhile, they're dispatching officers to the school because there's a voice. There's somebody possibly in distress. We don't know. Two officers show up at the school. It's a Saturday, so the school's not open. They enter the school through the front through what's called a Knox box key. So every officer in the area has this master key that will open up this little box on the side of the school, and inside is a key for the building. So they make entry. They walk inside. The two officers go in. There's nobody inside the building. They walk right up to the desk, the front desk where the 911 call came from. One of the officers finds the receiver sitting there, picks up the receiver, and starts a conversation with the dispatcher. Hey, yeah, this has to be the phone. It's literally laying on the counter. and it's an open line, what we call, right to you. So I'm talking to you. Yeah, we're going to check it out, see what we can find. So he hangs up. They search the entire building, which is only the office at the school. The classrooms were in like a separate building. So they search. It's a relatively smaller building. There's three ways that you can get in and out of the building: the front, back, and then off to the side where the counseling section is. Mm-hmm. They search the entire building. They find nobody. There are three sets of motion detecting lights in there, one in front of the lobby, one over the desk, and one behind the desk. So they go, they search the entire area. Lights come on when they're walking into areas. There's nobody there. They go down to the only room that's left to search is the nurse's office, which is towards the front, like right where they walked in. So they walk into the nurse's office, and as most officers will tell you, we slice pies, we try to go in as a team, we search through a very methodical method. So the two of them, not knowing which way it goes, they kind of go in side by side, and kind of one peel was going to peel off to the right, one's going to peel off to the left. But before they get that, they get through the door, and they're basically standing like shoulder to shoulder, and something pushes past them to the point where both of them end up having to move back like that, like spun.
Wow.
But they don't see anything. They turn around. They don't see anything. They go out into the office. There's nothing there. So at this point, they're like, there's nobody here. We can't find anybody. We're going to lock up. We're going to leave. So again, here's where this idiot gets involved. So I end up getting a call from the principal, and he's like, hey, did you hear about the 911 call at the school? And I'm like, why would there be a 911 call at the school? It's a Saturday. He's like, you need to talk to the officers that came here. So I'm like, okay. So I called dispatch. Hey, is there a 911 call at my school? Dispatcher says, you need to talk to this specific officer. So I'm like, okay. So I had his phone number. So I text him, hey, did you go to my school? And his response is, dude, your school is blanking haunted. I'm like, oh. Okay, so I call up and I'm like, dude, what are you talking about? So he proceeds to tell me everything that I just told you. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, that's weird. Like, I've never experienced anything. And at this time in my career, I was a hardcore skeptic. I didn't believe in much of anything like that. So I'm like, okay. So then I make the mistake of telling my sergeant, who is very big into the paranormal investigations. And he's like, well, you need to investigate this. And I'm like, Why do I need to investigate this? He's like, it's misuse of 911. And I'm like, who am I going to arrest? And so he's like, wow, just you need to do an investigation. So I end up doing an entire investigation into this. We go from every aspect of it the way we would handle any other criminal investigation. So I run down everything from the phone company to the phone service for the school to the 911 service, everything. Like, every box that I could possibly check off, I check off. So I confirm 100% that the call came from that desk, not from an adjoining classroom, routed through the front desk, not through any other place. It wasn't phoned in through a different source. Because every time I got to the point, well, maybe somebody like hacked the system, it didn't explain how the receiver ended up on the counter. I went so far, Charlotte, to take the receiver off the hook and just put it there to my ear and go, how long before this line just goes dead? 15 seconds, in case you're curious. Just because I was like, well, maybe the phone fell off on Friday and it's been sitting there for like a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And like, we ran down everything. We had a phone like repairman go out to the side of the building, open the phone box, look to see if somebody had entered there. There were cobwebs, cockroaches. There was nobody inside there. We look everywhere. So while this is happening, I pull the 911 tape. So I have a copy of the 911 tape. I also request a copy of the security footage. It's cool because there's a security camera right over the front door looking in the direction of that desk. Mm-hmm. So while I'm running down all these leads, I get the video back, and I have the audio. And I listen to the audio a couple of times. I'm like, yeah, it sounds like somebody's saying I'm scared. And then saying no, and then dropping the phone on the counter. It sounds pretty like straightforward. So I get the security footage, and I'm like, okay, well, obviously I'm going to find some kid. Somebody must have somehow snuck in there, called 911, got back out before the officers could get there, something. Because we have 14 minutes where the dispatcher's talking and the officers weren't there yet. 100% convinced that this is what it is. So I take the security footage. I go all the way back to 6 o'clock in the morning to start. At 7:10, one of the security guards who was working a Pop Warner football game there comes in through the back, doesn't go anywhere near the desk, grabs some paper to make a sign, and then walks back out. I know that because I talked to her, confirmed. The lights in front of the desk pop on when she comes in. She grabs the paper, grabs the marker, walks back out. 20 minutes later, the lights turn back on.
Wow.
About 10 o'clock in the morning, I think it was like 10:20, the lights just over the desk pop on. Not on either side of the desk. Now, this the way this desk is designed, you can't get to the desk unless you come from the front or the back, because there's a wall on both sides. So the lights just on over the desk pop on. I'm like, that's weird. Why would those ones, but not on either side? I don't know. Maybe it's a glitch. Maybe it's not. 20 minutes later, lights pop back off. So now it's getting close to the time that the 911 call comes in. That phone in question is almost dead center of the video. Like right there, the screen. I can see the desk. There's no way anybody could get to that desk without being seen. I'm like, okay, any minute now I'm going to see the lights pop on. Somebody's going to come over there and we're going to see it. So 11:54 rolls around. There ain't nobody there. None of the lights pop on. Nothing happens. I'm like, okay, that's weird. So I start confirming, you know, well, I watch it all the way. 14 minutes later, I see shadows coming up to the bottom of the screen. It's the two officers entering with the Knox box key. I watch them walk over. One of them walks right up. I watch him pick up the phone from the counter, have conversation. As they walk up, the first set of lights pop on. As he gets to the desk, the ones over the desk pop on. They have a conversation. One of them walks behind the desk. The ones behind pop on. So I know all the lights were working, but for some reason they weren't working when that call came in. I went back and checked it four or five times just to make sure that the timing was right. There's nobody at that phone when the 911 call comes in. So then they walk back. I watch them search. I watch them go down. Now, there's no cameras in the nurse's office, but the door to the nurse's office is right at the bottom of the screen. I see the two of them set up. I see the two of them walk through the door, and about 2 seconds later, I see the two of them run back out, looking around like they're trying to see something. And that's at the point where I'm like, okay, something's really kind of weird here. So we continue going down this road. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. I'm now getting to the point where I'm like, I'm having a hard time coming up with a logical explanation for this, because there's nobody at that phone. There's nobody, you know, they would be on video. There's nobody on the video. There's nobody there. So we keep doing our digging. We, while this is going on, I take the audio and I send it out for analysis with MUFON. So a couple of guys from MUFON that were going to, they're like, hey, we'll analyze the audio for you to see what it is. Okay, cool. So I send it out to them. In the meantime, I start doing old school investigation. So I start asking people around. I end up finding out that one of the receptionists that worked there supposedly was a medium. I went and talked to her a little bit. She's like, that has nothing to do with me. I know how to close what I'm doing. I know what I'm, there's nothing to do with me. Okay. And she seemed pretty convinced. And then I remembered that everything kind of like the big thing happened when they were in the nurse's office. So I walk over to the nurse's office. I walk in. I'd known the nurse for now. This is like my sixth year working at the school. So I'd known her for a while. Her husband was actually a sheriff's deputy. So I, you know, I've talked to her numerous times. So I walk in, very friendly, very outgoing school nurse type personality. She, real outgoing. I we're talking about stuff. And then I start, I bring up the topic. As soon as I bring up the topic about, hey, maybe this was like kind of weird. We got this 911 call. There was nobody at the phone. She immediately shuts down. And I'm like, okay, that's odd. So kind of end the conversation, go away, figure, yeah, I'll give it a little bit of time, I'll come back. But that was really strange. So I go back a couple hours later, she's friendly, outgoing again. We start talking until I bring up the topic again. And then she immediately shuts down. And I'm like, yeah, I've been a cop for a lot of years. I'm thinking that's what we call a clue. So I go, I'm going to give it a couple of days, and then I'm going to go back and talk to her again. During the time that I was giving her the couple of days, I get the results back from the 911 tape. The guys who analyze it, they're like, well, hey, you've got something. They're like, we don't know what it is. It's not a human voice. It doesn't look like a human voice on everything that we're looking at. But he's like, more importantly, you know, it doesn't say I'm scared. I'm like, what do you mean? And so they amplify it and play it back. It actually says, I scare. So when the dispatcher says, "You're scared," it says no, and then drops it, drops the phone. And the thing that's funny, what I found interesting is, you'll watch a lot of shows. I'm not going to bag on any paranormal shows. I think a lot of them are fantastic. But you always get them. They're like, they're asking questions. And then like 5 minutes later, there's a possible answer. And they're like, oh, they were answering that question that we asked 5 minutes ago. And I've always been like, right. Okay. But this was like a conversation like we're having. Like the dispatcher was 911. What's your emergency? I'm scared. What was that? I'm scared. You're scared? No. Like that quick. We're not talking like huge waste of like wasted air and then all of a sudden there's an answer. It was like conversation speed. And I'm like, that's like an intelligent response. And so when I asked them about that, and they're like, yeah, it says I scare. And I'm like, okay. And then she said, you're scared. And it says no. Okay, that's kind of messed up. So I take that. I go back to talk to the nurse again. And the nurse tells me, I walk in, friendly, outgoing, until I get to the topic. And then instead of shutting down this time, she looks at me and goes, fine, I'll tell you. And I'm like, what? And she proceeds to tell me that for her entire life, as far back as she can remember, she has had something that follows her. At her house, she'll be sitting in like the downstairs. She'll hear footsteps upstairs. She'll hear doors slamming when she knows that there's nobody else home. Her dog will bark at the corner where there's nothing. And then she says she'll move and everything will be peaceful at the new location for about a week and a half, 2 weeks, and then everything starts up again. So it's almost like whatever it is following her. So I look at her and I go, why didn't you tell me anything about this when I first asked a couple days ago? She said, because for the last 3 weeks, everything at the house stopped. It was peaceful. And I'm like, well, why are you telling me now then? And she said, because last night everything started again at the house. So she's convinced that it, and then here's the other thing. I end up pulling premise history for the school. We had two other 911 calls that came in from that front desk each a week prior. But the difference was there was no, like, it was like an open line. They were like, hello, hello. There's nobody there. No voice. So officers never made entry because there wasn't anybody there. So they ended up not doing anything. They just looked through the window, didn't see anybody, and canceled it. So now how does this bring about UAPPD, you might be asking? Because other than being a really cool story that actually made me go, you know what? There might be more stuff in this world than I think I know.
Right.
About a week after it happened, I had been talking with other officers, told my sergeant what happened. I get a phone call from a sergeant who says, you need to meet me upstairs. And anybody who's in law enforcement probably understands what I mean when I say you need to meet me upstairs. So I go up there, I walk into an office. He has the video on the screen. He has the audio tape on the screen ready to play. He plays all this stuff. He looks at me and goes, you expect me to believe this? And I look at him, I'm like, I don't expect you to do anything. That you're looking at the video. He proceeded to accuse me of lying. Accused me of hoaxing the entire thing. I looked at him and said, dude, I don't care about you that much to even hoax this. But he basically told me in not so many words, you will shut up and not talk about this. So I walk out of the office, and as I'm walking downstairs, the reality kind of hits me that at that point I had 6 years left in my career. Mm-hmm. I had a wife. I have kids. I could not afford to lose my job over this. And so like when I first said there is a price to transparency, those are the prices that we're talking about. And I decided that I was going to keep my mouth shut for the next 6 years because I did not want to lose the job. And one of the things I like to talk about during our presentations is if you're into the UFO community, everybody pretty much knows who Lonnie Zamora is. They've heard of Val Johnson. They've heard of Jim Blackwood, who are three police officers with very famous UFO sightings. Everybody knows about the officer up until the sighting. Nobody asks what happened after. And their lives are horrible. Blackwood came right out and said, the worst thing I have ever done was speak about this. Lonnie Zamora's career and life was never the same. And that is the cost of being truthful. Because there is a cost to pay. And so that's basically how we originated, because now 6 years passed. I'm now able to talk about it because they can't stop me now. Mm-hmm. And in the process, when we were having this conversation about why are officers not talking, it kind of dawned on us that there's got to be other officers that are going through what I was going through. And what they need is a place where they can talk about what they experienced, where they're not going to be judged. Nobody's going to criticize them, and it's safe. And so we extend that invitation to any officers. We have a website, we have Facebook, email, get a hold of us. We want your stories, and we will keep your name out of it unless you want it. We've actually had, we've got over 50 stories in the last year that we've been working on this. And we have officers all across the spectrum. We had one guy who just got promoted to sergeant. He's like, I need to tell you this story, but I can't have my name out. And so we took the story. We don't tell anybody who he is. And we've had other people that were like me. He's like, dude, I retired like last year. You can use my name. You can use my picture. You can whatever you want. I don't care. So
that's interesting that you say that, because while you were talking about that, the Ghost of Flight 401, that Tailton 11 that went down the Everglades, they had a similar policy. I mean, these pilots and these stewardesses, you know, on the other flights, of course, had parts from, you know, from that plane, right? But but the pilots and the stewardesses were afraid to go and talk about this stuff because it was a one way ticket to the psychologist, so they didn't talk about it. And then when I was reading the book, it also said that if they logged any of these events in their flight log, every time they landed, the powers that be would come in and take the flight log and put a new flight log in. So I can understand that. I can understand, you know, what officers go through.
And that's the thing, is like we're talking about the credibility. Okay, right. Dave, where I worked in same agency, I just worked down south, he worked up north. And I never had any of my guys or anybody in the south unit make fun of me, ridicule me, anything like that. I mean, actually, they know what I did. They know what organization, being part of MUFON and everything that I did. They respected me. They actually, if a call came in that was kind of like weird and they didn't know what to do, they kind of give that call to me because they know pretty much how I would handle it. Dave here, on the other hand, being the south side, or excuse me, the north side of the city, is he got ridiculed. When they even found out two weeks before he retired, 25 years, 2 weeks, he was still being ridiculed. I put out a little thing that we're starting UAPPD. This is going to be great, fantastic. And he'd get stickers, bumper stickers on his locker, you know, I honk for Grays or whatever. Right. I mean, it's happening to him. And that is just absolutely ridiculous. But the biggest thing on all that is the credibility for court purposes. You get a law enforcement officer that makes a comment like this, whether the ghost or seeing Bigfoot, a UFO, and he's on the stand for just a simple case, shoplifting, a stolen vehicle. You got the suspect dead to rights, but you got the defense attorney that's talking, you know, you're on the stand. He says, officer, you took an oath, tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. So you saw a light in the sky or you saw a Bigfoot. Well, what are you supposed to say? You can't lie. So yes, I did it. Long story is he starts laughing. He gets the jury, just one person on that jury, to start laughing with you and going, okay, this has got to be a nutcase of a cop.
Right.
That juror gets the 11 other jurors to vote not guilty because there's something wrong with this officer. Well, the defense attorneys talk to other defense attorneys, and now the whole group of, whether they're public defenders or whoever, know that, hey, you want to win a case against an officer? Just ask about Bigfoot. Just ask about the light in the sky. And you're going to win. Easy. Prosecutors figure this out. They go to the chief of police and go, we can't use this officer anymore. I mean, there's the credibility is totally shot. So chief of police says, well, unless you want to be a meter maid, basically, and write tickets, a parking ticket, we can't use you. So guess what? Your career is over. So whether 34, 25 years, doesn't matter. your career is totally done. And I'll tell you right now, no agency in the country would take you. Mm-hmm. So again, that's another reason why officers just keep their mouth shut and do not talk about what they see.
Well, I mean, I would think it's...
Quick, I was just going to say, a lot of it real too is just the stigmas that we talk about during our presentations. It's a lot of it is just, it's like believability. It's that family bond that officers have. It kind of spills over. It's kind of a mess.
I would think it's hard because, I mean, like if you're on a case like the one you talked about at the hospital, and there's, you know, there's records of the 911 calls and all this, and you talking to dispatch, all that's on record. So what happens to all that stuff?
You'd be surprised how stuff disappears, purged. Like the security footage from the school is gone. The only copy of it is I have on an old desktop in my office at my house that I can't figure out how to get off, but it's saved there. And the 911 call, they purge them after a while. And what they do is they use the excuse of kind of like when I first got involved in it, my boss at the time was like, you need to investigate this. And I was like, why? I mean, when it comes down to it, nobody was hurt. There wasn't any criminal activity that took place. Nobody, there was no damage. There was no theft, no fire. Nobody was hurt. So the reality is the departments can look at that and go, hey, this has no evidentiary value. So since nobody was hurt, no crime was investigated, we can purge it and go, and nobody will stop us because, hey, these are just 911 calls that were nothing. We ended up finding out that there was nothing. And in a sense, they're telling the truth because criminally, there was nothing.
Right.
Actually, there might have been a whole bunch of stuff, but I guarantee you it's happening all over because it's easy to purge that stuff. So we have a copy of the 911 tape because we copied it ourselves. We have a copy of the security footage because I copied it myself. And I have those things at myself. But other than that, you'd never find them. It's not going to be, you could send a request to our department, like a Freedom of Information request. They don't have it because they purged it with all of the other cases that had nothing.
Well, was it hard to get law enforcement to, personnel to come talk to you guys about this stuff? Because I would think they would be leery.
Hit and miss. Some people were more than willing to talk to us. Some of them aren't. But that's kind of why we got involved in this. Because part of what we talk about when we're doing our stigmas is that band of brother mentality that can hurt us in one way. With all of the mocking, because I mean, let's face it, everybody I think probably has a sibling. You know, who picks on you worse than your own siblings, right?
Right.
They pick on you. So it's that same thing because we build a brotherhood and sisterhood. We are literally willing to take a bullet for each other. And when I say literally, I mean literally, like stand there and get shot instead of the other officer. That's the level of trust that you have. Some officers are still leery to talk about it, but when we talk about it, I tell them my story and you can kind of see them. And we had like a great example. We had a detective that came over to talk to us about a case that he was working and we can't reveal that one because it's still a cold case, but he, you could see how like tight, like he was like clenched, like his shoulders were hunched and he knew he had to get it off. He didn't know who to talk to. He found out about us. We had been working with him for years. He comes over to Marianne's house. We're sitting there and talking. And at first you could see like, he didn't know if he wanted to say anything, but you could literally see the, like his muscles clench, like his jawline clench. And then I kind of talked to him. I was like, dude, you heard about what happened to me. And he's like, yeah, I don't really know a lot about it, but what was it? And so I kind of talked to him about it for a little bit. We kind of broke down that barrier. And then he starts talking about what he was experiencing. And you could literally, during the time, probably like a half hour that he was talking, you could see his shoulders start to slouch. You could see all of the muscles start to relax. And you could see that as he was getting it off, it was the first steps towards healing. Because these things that people are seeing, whether you're a police officer, a firefighter, or just another, like a bus driver or a garbage man or an accountant, when you encounter something that is unusual like that, whether it's a UFO, a ghost, a possession, a cryptid, there is a level of emotional trauma that you are facing. Now, a lot of macho police officers are like, oh, yeah, that doesn't affect us. That doesn't affect us. Yeah, we're trained to say that. The reality is whether I can say it until I'm blue in the face. Oh, it doesn't affect me. Mm-hmm. It is affecting me. And that same level of trauma has to heal somehow. And again, for 6 years, I had this stuff just going, like every day wondering, is this the day where I'm going to get called back upstairs and told, you needed to shut up. You didn't shut up. You're out. Mm-hmm. Or, hey, you're done. You're now a jail transport officer, or you're working teleserve. And it weighs on you. It weighs on you when you're thinking about it. So when the opportunity presents itself to talk to people that you know were willing to take a bullet for you on the job, we're still willing to take that bullet. But this time it maybe isn't the bullet itself. Maybe it's a figurative thing. Mm-hmm. So they come forward and we've had a lot of really good response. But like 100%, oh, 6 years ago, if you had walked up to me and after I had that conversation, I walked down the stairs on the first floor by the soda machine, you walk up to me and say, hey, tell me about that. I'd be like, oh, hell no. I ain't saying, what are you talking about? There ain't nothing. There was nothing.
Yeah, we ask, you know, folks, if they feel comfortable talking to us, sharing their encounters with us on the phone, great. A Zoom meeting would be great. But we actually had a first responder up in northern Arizona said, I'll tell you the story, but you need to come up here. I'm not doing it on the phone. I'm not doing it on Zoom. I want to do it in person. So I got a hotel room real quick and got in my Jeep and took off to northern Arizona and had a great meeting with this gal. And she actually gave me two great stories. So there, I know there's officers out there, and a lot of times they don't know how to react to us if they hear about us. Mm-hmm. But when we talk to them in person and they see who we are, that we are fellow cops, we, you know, we've been in the stressful situation just like you. And I want you to understand this is a quote unquote safe zone that you can tell us what happened. They'll freely start talking to us. And that's what we just need to get folks, get the word out that we are here to help you, and we are here to listen to your story. And again, have no problem either in person or on phone, whatever they feel more comfortable with.
What experience did you have that got you into this?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Nothing. Okay. This is the cool thing is my late husband is the one that got me into MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, 2014. He went to his first international UFO Congress that was here in Scottsdale, Arizona, and loved it. Hey, I was like Dave, I was a skeptic. I'm like, you know, I told my husband, knock yourself out, go get him, have a great time. Mm-hmm. Well, he asked me to go to a MUFON meeting here in Phoenix, and I was kind of like, I didn't want to go, but I went, and Kathleen Martin was the speaker. And oh my gosh, she is such an amazing woman. And as a cop, you know, we got to look for the you know, is she being truthful? Is she just telling stories? Let's look at the body language. Mm-hmm. She is the neatest lady in the world. And we're still good friends to today. But it was like, no, this is real. This is true stuff. And ever since the ending of the end of 2014, when we helped out with Travis Walton's Skyfire Summit that we had in November, I had Peter Robbins, Richard Dolan, and the late, great Stan Friedman stay here at my house. And you talk about an education into UFOs and the studies and the science of all this. So that's kind of what got me into, you know, getting into MUFON, becoming a field investigator. Mm-hmm. And then when we, like I said, when we started talking just what, about a year and a half ago, when we started talking, hey, military's talking, pilots, I'm sorry, but I've got to see something. And that's how we started all this. And then Dave, because we've known each other, well, 25 years. Yeah, we've known each other for about 30 now.
Yeah.
When he told me what happened to him, I says, okay, let's start this organization. So Now it's basically I'm the one who's retired and really don't have to work anymore. Mm-hmm. So I'm the one who's able to go out and get stories if I have to go to different states or somewhere here in Arizona. Poor Dave. He's still working.
Not as a cop anymore. I retired as a cop, but I still had to get another job because I have little kids and a wife still to pay for.
Gotcha. So your story, Dave, was so fascinating, you know, with the hospital. I mean, that is just...
It was a high school.
My bad. One of those days.
But ironically, we also have a hospital story as well, but that's a different one.
Well, can you share some more stories with us? Is that a possibility?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want to do one of the...
Yeah, I'll do one. Now, what's interesting, you talk about law enforcement officers that want to kind of remain anonymous, especially... Mm-hmm. If they're still working. Well, mm-hmm. that's more of, how do I put it, politically correct is on the white man side, if you want to put it, I don't know how else you put it.
I would have said non-resident, like a reservation officer.
Okay.
Because we have officers on the reservation, and we have officers that are off the reservation.
I was going to say Navajo, but the Indian reservation officers. Mm-hmm. Tribal officers, that's what they're called, tribal officers. We've had a lot from northern Arizona and also here in southern Arizona. And when we've done interviews with them, they're like, yeah, I still work, but you can use my name. Oh, it's no problem. It's all good. And we're saying, what? It is, I don't want to, I guess you'd call it, it's the norm.
Mm-hmm. It's
on the tribal.
It's a land. Part of their culture. So real quick, I'm just going to step in here.
Yeah,
I don't want to step on toes, but on the reservations here in Arizona, we have a ton of different reservations around. And the Native American beliefs are very much with star people, with cryptozoological creatures, spirits, the paranormal. To them, since birth all the way up to adulthood, that's what they hear about. It's so ingrained in their culture and woven through their history. That to them, if you look at somebody and say, hey, I saw a, let me just see, it's dark outside, I'm not going to use that word. If I saw a creature that I won't talk about, but there's a TV show that's based off of it, you don't say the words after dark. If you were to say that to one of them, they'd be like, oh, yeah, like maybe I didn't see one. But, oh, yeah, I know people who saw them. And, like, I like to joke around. I say it's like when we tell people, hey, I saw a payphone. Everybody knows what a payphone is, but you'd be hard-pressed to find one right now. Mm-hmm. But it's the same thing. But all of these entities and creatures and incidents are so woven in their culture that mm-hmm. it's the norm. So to them, reservation officers don't have the same stigma because that level of, like, I don't want to say distrust, but distrust for lack of a better term, on our credibility isn't there when they're on the res because the community believes it.
Okay. That's why I keep him around. Sure. He explains that really well. Anyway, one of the tribal officers that we had in the southern part of Arizona came over and he had quite a few stories to share with us. And again, he had no problem telling us, yeah, use my name. I have no problem with that. One of the stories was back in 2019, he and his partner went out to a house up on the reservation. Mm-hmm. It was a welfare check. Adjoining reservation got a 911 call from this house where they were hearing screams and yelling from a woman screaming and yelling for help. They found out it was on the adjoining reservation, so they contacted them. And this officer and his partner went out to the house. Well, they're knocking on the door. Hey, hello, is anybody here? There's no cars in the driveway. And so they're just kind of walking. It's just a single level house. Mm-hmm. They're knocking on the doors and knocking on the windows. Hey, we're just here to make sure you're okay. You're not in any trouble. Please just say something. Hello, and knocking. Well, they go to the one side and they start knocking on the window. Well, all of a sudden, there's a knock on the window back to him. And so they kind of go, okay, something's going on. So the officer starts walking around to the other side of the house to get with his partner to tell him, hey, I just heard a knock. I don't know what's going on, but we need to see if there's someone in there. All of a sudden, there is a loud woman scream coming from inside this house. And it's on the body camera of my witness. His partner is looking at him with his eyes are now wide open, like, did we really hear what we heard? About, oh, I don't know, 3-4 seconds later, there's a second scream. At that point, they get on the radio, they tell dispatch, hold the channel, there's somebody inside, we're going to go in. Mm-hmm. So the officer gets and he kicks the door to the side of the house. Well, there was a couch that was just right up against, for some reason, it was sitting right up against the door. So he took the officer about 3 times. He kicked, was able to finally get in. They announced themselves. They looked around the whole entire house. It's not a very big house, mm-hmm. but they looked all around the house. And then what they did was they switched. They went, each one went one way, and then they switched, and then they went around the other way. So just in case the fellow officer missed a spot. It is known in that area for drug smugglers and stuff like that. So they looked, they moved all of the rugs, they moved all the furniture to make sure there was no trap door. Nothing, absolutely nothing. Sergeant arrives on scene. They tell the sergeant what happened. And they even play back the body cam because the sergeant's like, oh, you're not telling the truth. Kind of like what happened with Dave here. You're not telling the truth. You're not telling. He watched the body camera. They heard the screams. So the sergeant went in and checked it. Nothing. All the officers left except my witness, who was told, wait till you board up the house and leave a note for the homeowner. She wasn't home yet. Mm-hmm. Now, 15 minutes later, the homeowner shows back up. So he tells her what's going on, what he heard with his partner. I'm sorry, but we kicked in the door and we had to search your house and everything was okay. She goes, well, thank goodness, finally, somebody else is hearing these screams. And that kind of floored him, like, what? This gal had a roommate that just moved out probably a few days prior to. This girl was having issues with a ghost, and she was being tormented, and she supposedly was raped by some type of spirit that was in that house. And I guess she just took off and left. And the homeowner goes, I'm so glad that somebody else is hearing stuff that I'm hearing. Well, as the gal is trying to put stuff together, she notices that this table that has all of these religious figurines. There was one table that had all these religious figurines, but now they're all knocked over because of maybe one of the officers while during the search. Mm-hmm. And this girl, this lady, the homeowner, went from being really nice to very, very, very rude and angry and yelling at the officer, what did you do? What did you do? And she's literally taking these figurines and slamming them, putting them upright. She goes, you can't do this. I can't believe you did this. You're going to get this. All these spirits are going to come get you now. And he's not understanding it. But she's saying these were the spirits that were basically keeping the house safe since this gal left. And now the officer knocked everything over. Mm-hmm. So the homeowner yells at him, says, you're going to be cursed. Get out of my house. Don't ever come back. And she's trying to put these figurines back. So basically he said, okay, sorry. And he left. But he could not figure out, neither his partner, what in the world those screams. It came from, something that probably was left by that lady that was, being cursed by these evil spirits.
Wow. And
my favorite part of that story is he actually gave us the body cam footage. So we actually have it, and you can hear the scream, the first scream, clear as day. And you can see the other officer when the scream happens, the look on his face is classic. And that's why Marianne said, like, his eyes got huge. Because he's literally, the officer, like, our witness is talking to him. So the body cam has the other officer in the screen. And when you hear the scream, he literally goes like this, like, what? And then they go running over to the door. And as they're knocking on the door, you can hear the other scream. And he had to tell us that there was the couch behind the door. because it took them like 3 kicks to kick it open. And so, you know, being cops, we're kind of like, oh, yeah, I can kick that door open. And he's like, hey, you just need to know there was a couch on the other side of this door. That's why it took me 3 kicks to get it open. We're like, okay, yeah, that's fine. We're not judging. We don't judge.
I just find all this so interesting because, like you say, it's unfortunate that they really can't report this stuff, you know, and talk about it. Because, I mean, it is happening out there, and I think it happens a lot more often than people think, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's like what we said, what Marianne said at the beginning. There's 800,000 police officers that are currently working. They're seeing stuff. Maybe not all 800,000. I mean, here's a case in point. I had, you know, we got 50% right here. I saw something she never did. But there has got to be a lot of officers seeing stuff. And just because of the stigma and not knowing that we exist because we've only been around for a little over a year, maybe they're like looking at each other going, man, I wish I could talk to somebody about this. I just wish I knew who I could trust. And since we just got started, we've actually been on a number of different radio shows, podcasts. We were on Coast to Coast AM just a couple weeks ago. And we're getting stories from all over. We had people from Europe, like England and Ireland, and somebody from Mexico City. People kind of all reaching out to us, kind of asking about what we're doing. And it's now starting to get out. And that's what we want, is we want to get the thought, our concept out there for people to look at us and get a hold of us and know that you don't have to carry that inside anymore. You have an out with people that aren't going to judge you, aren't going to make fun of you, and have actually been there. So there's a little bit more like weight, because if you think about it, we were first responders first. So we know what it's like to do that job. And we've experienced things that we can't explain. So it's like two levels of understanding that we can bring to the table and help people just kind of get past it and start working towards healing.
Now, is this only for police officers or like all around first responders? Because, I mean, fire department must be involved with this stuff too.
Any first responder, firefighter, police officer, federal agent, game warden, park rangers. We've had some interesting stories from park rangers. Anybody who is a first responder, EMT, ambulance driver, anybody who's a first responder that's just looking, because all of those professions share that thing in common where your credibility is paramount. And where do you go if you encounter something? And now we're here and we're willing to listen. We're having great turnout. Some of the stuff that's interesting is we actually went and spoke at the MUFON Symposium in Dallas and got stories from people in Dallas. We went and spoke at a event down in Globe, had a lady from California come over and tell us a story. We're getting online information from our website, people from other states. That's what we want. We want to get as many stories as we can, because the more people we can talk to will show more people that they can trust us. And then the more people that trust us will get us more stories, which will ultimately accomplish, which is what we want, which is to help these officers, these first responders, get over and get past the trauma that they faced when they encountered this thing.
My next question is that when you talk about forest rangers, for instance, can you give me a brief story on something they saw?
I had a park ranger come up to me and tell me how it was like, and at the end of their shift or the end of the day, they have to go around to the different outhouses, facilities in the park. It's a rather large park. And they have to like lock everything up. So this particular park was right next to a cemetery. I know, nice placement. He goes over and he's locking up all of the facilities, locking the doors to like the storage areas and stuff like that. Well, he locks the doors to these restrooms, and out of the corner of his eye, he sees a person like standing there. So he turns to confront, because the park's closed and not supposed to be anybody there. So he's going to tell him, hey, dude, you got to get out of the park. As he turns, the figure turns and runs. And he's like, it's dark, so it just looked like this black figure. Like, I couldn't see what it was. So, of course, they run. So, like most good law enforcement, whether they're a park ranger or a cop, when somebody runs, what's the first thing we do? We chase. We're like dogs. We do that. So he takes off, and he's running after the thing. The person goes over this low wall that was adjoining the cemetery to the park, and right. He is literally 10 steps behind it, but it's dark, so all he can really see is this like black shadow kind of person walking or running. Mm-hmm. So he gets over, hops over the wall, and the person should be right there. It's the clearing in the cemetery, an area where there weren't any real graves, so there mm-hmm. weren't any gravestones or anything like that. Everything was flush to the ground. When he hops over the wall, and he stops and looks, and there's nothing there. And mm-hmm. he's like, there's no way. Like, whatever it was, they should be, like, right there.
Right.
And he's like, I couldn't tell you what it was because it looked like it was just, like, a black figure, like a shadow figure that he was chasing. And it went right over the wall. He hopped right over the wall. It was a low wall. And when mm-hmm. he landed on the other side, it should have only been, like, 10 feet away from him. And there was nothing there. And there, more importantly, there was nothing for it to hide behind either. There wasn't a place where it could knock down behind a stone. And so he turned around and like looked, and it was gone. And he's like, what the heck? Mm-hmm. And so that's just like a real quick example of one of a park ranger that we ended up talking with.
Very interesting. What's next for you guys?
Well, like next, as in yeah. like our next speaking. Thing, our next speaking engagement is yeah. up in Bullhead City. We have a speaking engagement in Bullhead City at the Mojave County Community College Speaker Series, and that's on October 4th, which is up in the Bullhead City, Laughlin, Nevada area, mm-hmm. up in that area. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we have Paradise Valley Community College has a CSI day. Which is interesting because mm-hmm. it's all about crime scene investigations. They heard about us and we're like, hey, we want you guys to come and talk about UAPPD and talk about different sightings and stuff, even though it's you know, not really like a crime scene investigation thing, but they were still interested. It's kind of shocking to see how many people are really interested in this.
Mm-hmm. And we are in the process starting. We are looking to write a book and we've got one or two chapters done now?
Yeah, more like three.
But we are. I know with him working full time and stuff, but we are in the process of writing a book and all. But if there's anybody out there that would like us to come out, either do a presentation for them mm-hmm. or if they have any great encounters they would like to share, we're more than happy to just, you know, travel anywhere we need to meet with these folks.
And the book, if they want to tell us a story for the book, great. Mm-hmm. If they want to tell us a story and they're like, I don't want it in the book. I don't want my name in it. That's mm-hmm. completely fine too. We only put stuff in the book that the officer looks at us and says, I'm willing for this to go in the book. And then our next question is how much of your information do you want? Because like I said, we have guys that are like, here's a great story I want to tell you. You can use this story for the book, but I don't want my name in it. And so we're just leaving True. The name out. We're just saying an officer from a city in Arizona. And we just go with that. And we leave it out. Because again, our number one thing, besides getting officers the opportunity to get this off of their chest, is to protect them. You know, uh-huh. and that starts with keeping their names out of it.
Absolutely. Well, that's great. What's your website?
It is uap-pd.com. Mm-hmm. And I want to thank a good friend of mine, Alejandro Rojas, for redoing it. Unfortunately, our website got hacked a while back and it was down, but we got a brand spanking new server website. It's real exciting, but it's, yeah, just uap-pd.com. Mm-hmm. Scroll to the bottom, has a contact us. And please put your information in. It'll go to my email, and I'll contact you right away.
And we also have a Facebook page, UAPPD.
Yeah, UAP-PD.
So if you want to check out what we got going there as well, if you want to make a comment, feel free to make that there as well. Yep. Those are two big ways to get a hold of us.
Fantastic. Thank you guys so much for coming on. It was terrific. I would love to have you on again and talk to you. I mean, this cool. is good stuff. This is great.
Awesome, absolutely. Charlotte. Thank absolutely. You so much for having us.
Thank you.
And I apologize for the dog. I don't know what her trip is, so I'm going to go yell at her.
Okay, it worked with one of her stories, the dog barking.
I don't know what her trip was. Then she was standing right outside the door here barking, too, so I don't know what her trip was. So I got to have a little chat
just with her. Just wanted to be part of the program.
Oh, yeah, she wanted to get on camera today and everything. You never know with animals. All right, yeah, I'll be in touch with you after the show because I have another project that I'm working on.
Okay, cool.
That excellent. I could probably... Maybe if you'd be willing to part with some stories that I could use for that, we'll talk about it.
Okay, absolutely. Excellent. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you so much. You have a great rest of your evening.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, fascinating. It's everything I thought it would be tonight, and I'm glad they're doing that because, like they said, you know, it's really hard for law enforcement and pilots and all these people, you know, to go to their superiors to say, hey, this happened to me when I was on shift. It's very difficult because of the way they're trained and the way that people feel that they should be thinking, you know, that kind of thing. Okay, Sunday I'll be back at 6 p.m. Pacific, and I'll be reading from Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. And Monday our guest will be Nicole Strickland, and we're going to be talking about the Queen Mary and paranormal investigation. So I will see you guys on Sunday, 6 p.m. Pacific, and I'll have to go have a little chat with the dog and see what's going on with her. But sorry about the dog. I apologize. I don't know what her thing is. She's all quiet now, so I don't know what's going on. So, somebody may have stopped by or something. But anyway, I will see you guys on Sunday. If you like the show, share it with 5 people. If you hate the show, share it with 5 of your enemies. We're equal opportunity here at California Haunts Radio, just trying to get the word out about our show. And you've been doing a great job. Let's just keep it up and keep that up. And also, if you like the show tonight, you like what you heard besides the dog screaming in the background, leave me a thumbs up or a happy heart or something. You know, show us some love. All right, guys, I'll see you on Sunday, 6 p.m. Pacific. Have a great weekend.